South Dakota Public Broadcasting, sdpb.org.
July 1, we can always come back, and if there's significant violation of it, which I don't expect there will be, because in many cases, in many counties across the state, it's already occurring. It's in some that it's not. And victim advocates, victims have victim advocate organizations in some of the counties, larger counties, not all counties, that will keep track of this. So we didn't put in an enforcement mechanism. I think the intent of the law is very clear, and prosecutors will understand that. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions of the committee? Seeing no further questions, we will close to committee questions and open to committee discussion or action on House Bill 1122.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hamill.
I would move the passage of House Bill 1122.
Second.
Moved by Hamill, seconded by Gibson. Remarks on that motion, Representative Hamill.
Seems like a very straightforward bill to me. I was interested in Representative Lust's question. What do you do if a state's attorney doesn't follow the law? Is there a remedy to that? That is a question. But otherwise, I certainly encourage passage of the legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion on that motion by the committee? Representative Hoffman.
I, Madam Chair, I just have one request from you that the Secretary would count me as present and not absent.
I think she has noted your presence, Representative Hoffman.
Chair.
We're glad to see you here this morning. Representative Mosher.
I think that's, you know, the only real question with this bill. I was kind of disappointed that my seatmate didn't bring something more controversial on his birthday that we could give him a hard time about, but you know, living in a community the size of Yankton and knowing that I believe state's attorneys have to be reelected every 2 years, right? So that might be one mechanism to motivate them to follow the law, but I think in small communities and probably large ones as well, the people are going to hold them accountable, and I'm hopeful that that'll be the case as well. And if not, then we'll come in next year and make amendments as needed. So I think it's a good bill, and I support the passage. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions or comments of the committee? Representative
Madam Chair,
Hunt.
No, I think Ruben's staff counsel here has an answer to this question. Ruben, why don't you, if you wouldn't mind, just relay what you just relayed to me, too.
As far as enforcement procedures are concerned, there is a provision in state statute that basically says that any time there is an affirmative duty imposed upon someone and they fail to do that, that is technically a Class 2 misdemeanor. In this instance, you're going to have a situation where I doubt if you're going to have a prosecutor prosecuting himself, but there's also such a thing as misfeasance of office, and other people would be in charge of supervising whether or not any particular person is guilty of that, and I believe that's your ultimate legal responsibility. Election is probably your most practical solution.
Thank you. I think that is something that we did discuss, as Representative Ingalls may remember, during the criminal code revision, that even if it's not specifically stated as a penalty, failure to follow statutory language can result in a Class 2 misdemeanor. So thank you for that, Ruben. Further discussion on the Hamill motion to do pass on House Bill 1122. Seeing none, those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The Secretary will please call the roll.
Representative Ingalls?
Aye.
Feinstein?
Aye.
Gibson?
Aye.
Gosch?
Aye.
Hamill?
Aye.
Hoffman?
Aye.
Killer?
Aye.
Lust?
Aye.
Mosher?
Aye.
Schleckaway?
Aye.
Turbeville?
Aye.
Hunt?
Aye.
Cutler?
Aye.
Madam Chair, 13 ayes.
And House Bill 1122 goes to the floor, do pass. Any further action on House Bill 1122? Representative Lust.
Madam Chair, divining your look, I'm going to ask that this be put on the consent calendar.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, Representative Feinstein objects, so we will not have this bill on the consent calendar. And happy birthday, Representative Northrup. I tried to give you the ultimate present there at the end with the consent calendar. All right. It's nice when the committee can start to know the way I'm looking. I really appreciate that, that you picked up on that. It's only taken 4 years, right? Next in the calendar, then, we will move to House Bill 1123. House Bill 1123 is an act to remove certain sanctions related to public assistance for certain felony drug offenders. With that, we are open to proponent testimony on House Bill 1123. Anybody know where Representative Vanderlinde could be this morning?
She sent you some email.
I haven't seen that.
Either Monday or Wednesday next week.
Well, we'll schedule it for Monday. In my absence, I guess there's been a request that House Bill 1123 be deferred to next Monday. And so anyone in the room wishing to testify on House Bill 1123, that will be calendared for next Monday. With that, we move in the calendar to House Bill 1138. House Bill 1138, an act to provide for the defeasance of the Commission on the Status of Women, and our own Representative Ingalls.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Representative Rich Ingalls from Hartford, and I bring to you today House Bill 1138, an act to provide for the defeasance of the Commission on the Status of Women. This year, in preparation for the legislative session, I went through the code books and found a number of different statutes that were either outdated or not being enforced. And I have about six repeal bills this year, and this is one of the repeal bills that I have. In doing research on the Commission on the Status of Women, the Commission was established in 1973, about the time that the Equal Rights Amendment was prominent nationwide. It was defunded in 1981, and from what I could tell, there is nobody currently appointed to the Commission. I got the legislative manual, the Blue Book, which has a comprehensive list of all the commissions in the state, and there is no, the Commission on the Status of Women and its membership are not listed currently. I also spoke to one of the former members of the Commission of the Status of Women, a former legislator who was in office at the time this was established, and she told me basically what's consistent with my research, that it was defunded in 1981, and the functions were transferred to the Department of Social Services, and there have not been any meetings held for a number of years, and there's nobody currently appointed. I think it's appropriate that we have this bill here today on Women for Women Day, where we could have people, politically active women from all over the state, to come and give some commentary on this bill, including my wife, who's also here, although not in the room today. I could also tell you that a lot of the functions that were to be performed by the Commission on the Status of Women are now performed by the Division of Human Rights in South Dakota. And the Commission on Human Rights in South Dakota. One of the, I'll just read you the enacting statute for the Division of Human Rights. Their charge is to investigate and study the existence, causes, extent of discrimination in employment, housing accommodations, property rights, education, public accommodations, and public services, and attempt to eliminate any such discrimination by education and conciliation. And the different discrimination that they are charged with studying, investigating, and eliminating are for race, color, creed, religion, sex, ancestry, disability, or national origin. So I believe that a lot of the functions that were performed by the Commission on the Status of Women would now be performed by the Division of Human Rights, including studies. So with that, I'd also like to read you one statute that's being repealed here regarding the Commission on the Status of Women. The Commission shall elect a vice chairman, secretary, and treasurer, which with the chairman shall compose the executive committee. Each officer, with the exception of the chairman, shall serve a one-year term or until his successor is elected and qualified. So we don't draft statutes like that anymore, and I think that's a good thing. And I would stand by for any questions.
Thank you, Representative Ingalls. Other proponent testimony for House Bill 1138? Seeing none, is there any opponent testimony to House Bill 1138? If not, we will close to proponent and opponent testimony and open to questions of the committee. Are there any questions of the committee?
I'd like to make some comments.
Are you a proponent or opponent? I will.
Okay. I missed my chance.
Well, we'll let you come up to the witness stand if you like, and you are testifying as an
opponent.
We will ask you to come up and identify yourself as an opponent to House Bill 1138, then, if you would, please.
Thank you. Sorry about my confusion.
Good morning. My name is Susan Nolan, and I am very glad to have the chance to participate in the democratic process this morning. I'm from Rapid City. And I'd like to speak on behalf of myself and the 51% of the women who live in South Dakota as I speak from the perspective of, let me clarify it for myself. I would like to see the Commission on the Status of Women to be reinvigorated, revitalized, have people appointed to it. Women in our state have had a pretty tough time the last 4 years with the legislature trying to regulate our reproductive rights. And it has, for many women, created a feeling that the legislature has created in our state a very toxic environment for women. To do away with the Commission on the Status of Women speaks reams to women across the state about the status of women in our state. And I am here to speak on behalf of reinstating a commission that has been defunct for a number of years, which says a lot to women in our state that it hasn't been active. There are enormous issues affecting women in South Dakota, economics being one, health care being another, and they are specifically women's issues. These are different kinds of issues that are affecting women in our state. And as I look at the legislature, women are woefully underrepresented in our legislature. There are, I think, in our state legislature, 14% of our representatives are women. So I think there's a very good case for the fact that women are the poorest in our state. They work two jobs to try to make ends meet. They're woefully underrepresented in leadership positions in our legislature, and it sends a huge message to women across the state of South Dakota. When the legislature decides not to activate, not to breathe new life into an issue that affects 51% of your constituents. So I am here to speak passionately about the women in our state and the issues that they encounter, and to ask that the Commission on the Status of Women have people appointed to it. Women for Women Day is today. There are women who are in this Capitol to talk with you about the passionate issues they have that affect women and children in our state. And certainly to do away with this commission, says Reams. To have a commission that does nothing is certainly not what we want. To have a commission that's made up of women who can speak about the issues of women and speak in a way that can work with you to raise up this population in South Dakota who is really in a tough situation. I urge you to really think about the message it sends to do away with the Commission on the Status of Women. Thank you.
Thank you. Since we have opened to opponent testimony, is there any other opponent testimony?
You went by so fast on that, I almost missed it. I apologize. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mandy Hagseth. I'm here speaking on the behalf of the South Dakota Advocacy Network for Women, which is a network of organizations from across the state of South Dakota. I believe the number is 24 organizations, varied women's groups statewide. I'm here in strong opposition to House Bill 1138. Not going to reiterate, I think that everybody's had a couple of good points here. I want to throw out a couple of quick stats that I think will leave you with some lasting impressions as to why we're opposed to this piece of legislation. According to the Institute for Women's Policy Research, they put out a report called The Status of Women in the States. The most recent one that I could find is from 2004. In that, I'd like to throw out a couple of quick letter grades that the state of South Dakota received. In political participation, women in South Dakota received a D minus. I think Ms. Nolan had mentioned that women are underrepresented in our legislative body. Of course, we know that the number is 20 of 105. In employment and earnings, South Dakota received a C minus. In social and economic autonomy, South Dakota received a D plus letter grade. And in reproductive rights, we received a straight F. I think it's extremely important. Of course, I agree with the assessment that to have a commission that does nothing, that isn't funded, probably doesn't do us a lot of good. And while I concur with Representative Ingalls that human rights and women's rights certainly correlate in a lot of different ways, I think it's very important that we differentiate. South Dakota has the third highest percentage of Native women in the entire country. 46.6% of families in South Dakota with children under 18 are headed by Native women, the head of their family. We have 70% of women in the workforce. There are some statistics that I've recently read about the women that have two jobs and families. I could not find that in the couple of minutes that I had here, but it is something to also consider. We move that you please vote in opposition to this piece of legislation, and the next logical step would be to reinstate the commission. As I understand it, it was a very effective program in its pinnacle, and I think that we could benefit from filling the committee, supplementing the Human Rights Commission, and working forward to improve the status of women in South Dakota. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other opponent testimony to House Bill 1138? Good morning.
Good morning, committee.
We'll need ask you to take the mic, if you would, please.
My name is Evelyn Reese.
I think you'll have to turn it on.
I'm not in the technological age. I'm
so many of us aren't. You're in a friendly group in that regard.
A little bit like McCain, in a sense. My name's Evelyn Greasy. I am from Sioux Falls, and I'm here representing myself, but I like to think that there's a crowd of women behind me and in front of me who say that this is not a good bill. The Commission on Status of Women, as I knew it as a younger person when it was very active and was very important in helping raise awareness among women about what they could do and what their issues were, even defining the issues for women, because sometimes we don't even realize that as our daily lives go on, that there's something just a little amiss, but we don't put our finger on it. When you have a commission or a group of people, individuals getting together to talk, that becomes more clarified and much more relevant to your own lives. With the Commission on the Status of Women, that was one of their principles, was to bring these issues into a foreground or into a public arena for discussion and for, in a sense, resolution of problems that might have been brought up or where people have been made aware of those problems. And among women, we know that we define issues as women's issues, but they are in essence the issues of all family members and the issues of the state. When the women are not getting an equitable pay, when they are discriminated against in the insurance, there's an upcoming bill on prescription coverage, those issues are very important, but they don't get a really good focused attention until someone brings it to the fore and really investigates it or applauds what has gone on with
women and families and the economic status of the state. If we take this commission away, we have no foundation. We've taken away a foundation for that investigation and conversation. As it stands on the law, it's not doing anything against us. It's not doing much for us, of course, but it is not a threat to anyone that I would know. But if we take it away, we don't have that foundation already in place to activate some kind of study group that might go on or to give it some credibility. Right now, it is of no harm to us, only in the sense that it's not functioning. It's important for us to keep it in place, and hopefully, as future keeps coming at us, we will find the monies to fund it so that where there can be the public input on that grassroots level and then bring it to the more political arena. So I hope that you vote to do not pass this. It is not hurting anyone as it stands. We don't want to take this foundation out of our governmental structure that provides public input and awareness for all citizens. Thank you very much.
Thank
if there's
you.
Any questions.
Thank you. Is there any other opponent testimony? We look for any opponent testimony that could bring something new to the table that we haven't heard yet. If not, we will close. Normally, if we've already opened and closed to testimony, we wouldn't go back to it. But I know that many of you have driven a long way to be here, and since we have some time this morning, with the indulgence of the committee, we're able to accommodate your testimony and appreciate you being here. And I think Representative Ingalls, there was a little competition over in the corner for your attention, I see. But you may want to give your rebuttal since there was opponent testimony.
I just want everybody to realize that in bringing this bill, I'm not making any kind of statement on the status of women in South Dakota, but rather I'm making a statement about a chapter of the code that's simply an empty shell. I look forward to the day where our legislative chambers are filled with women and in proportion to their proportion of the population and our judges' chambers and all other elected offices. And in office, I've been a strong proponent of equal rights for everybody. One of the things that was told to me by a former legislator, former member of the Commission on the Status of Women, is that by 1981, at the time that it was defunded, it had devolved into another forum where pro-life and pro-choice people were fighting that intractable battle. And I believe that if it were reinstated and 12 members were appointed by the governor, that it would once again become a forum to fight over the abortion issue. And I don't know that that really serves a purpose. Consider that the governor appoints 12 people, and most likely those 12 people are going to agree on with the governor on the issue of abortion. Testimony was here today that the commission is not hurting anyone. Perhaps if it were reinstated, it might hurt someone. We don't know what would come of that. So just one more thing to consider.
Thank you. We will close then to proponent and opponent testimony and open to questions of the committee. Representative Mosier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for Representative Ingalls.
State your question.
You said that it was defunded in 1981, so is that the last time there were members serving? Is that a safe assumption?
Pretty safe assumption, right around that time. The membership lasts for 3 years, and I'm not sure when the last members were appointed. It would have been sometime around that time, I believe.
Thank you.
Other questions of the committee? Seeing none, Representative Mosier.
Got one in under the wire there. Thank you. Question.
Everybody seems to be doing that this morning.
It's Monday after
it's
the Super
Monday,
Bowl.
Right?
Question for Ms. Hegseth. Did I pronounce your name right?
You did. Thank you.
Just a couple of questions, if I might have just a little bit of latitude. 2004 study that you referenced, do you know off the top of your head who conducted it?
Yeah, it's conducted by the Institute for Women's Policy Research. They look into a number of different areas, of which many I mentioned, examine state by state. Even they look into the status of men in a couple of different ways and put that alongside of the status of women. But yeah, the stats that I provided are exactly from that.
Follow up, Representative Mosher.
Thank you. In lieu of the fact that the commission hasn't existed since 1981 and considering some of the points that Representative Ingalls brought up, I'm curious, just in your own personal opinion, would something like this be better privately organized, or do you think that it's something that should remain a part of the state government?
That's a good question. I would say that Representative Ingalls brought up a very good point. We could point to the task force to study abortion, which had a similar composition. The governor was largely in, I think, combination with the pro tem, appointing the representation on that body. And it did, in fact, seem as if there perhaps was an imbalance. So I guess I would say that, while I've not considered that in its entirety, I would say that in state government, if we would look at it, I think that we would be able to examine the different realms and different kind of crevices in all of these different issues. That's a difficult question to answer. I would say that they would both have pros and they would both have cons. But I think today we need to look at keeping it as a government entity. So I would still speak in opposition.
Thank you.
Other questions of the committee? Chair. Representative Feinstein.
Madam Chair, a question for Ms. Hagseth.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, in talking to one of my constituents who happens to be here today wearing a purple shirt, she said in today's world, maybe it should be commissioned on the status of people.
Perhaps.
And instead of just limited to women, because I believe the issues, many of the same issues, have been expanded since 1981 and going on. And how would you view, for example, if there was an amendment to strike the word women, put people in everywhere in this, would that be something that you could be in favor of, and maybe other opponents?
I would say this, Representative Feinstein. Considering that I'm here as a lobbyist for the Advocacy Network for Women, I would absolutely speak to the fact that women, not people, women, are disproportionately affected by a number of different issues in the state of South Dakota. So I think it would be dangerous, and I think that the scope would be far too broad to look into these issues to the extent that we would really need to do to suggest real practical solutions to some of these existing problems. So I would be opposed to that.
Other questions of the committee? Seeing none, we will close to committee questions and open to committee discussion or action on House Bill 1138.
Madam Chair.
Representative Turbeville.
Madam Chair, I would recommend due pass on House Bill 1138.
Moved by Turbeville. Is there a second? Seconded by Representative Ingalls. Remarks on that motion, Representative Turbeville.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chairman. And I do welcome all the ladies here today that are here on behalf of women. As a brother of four sisters and a father of three daughters, I have the strongest lobby possible waiting for me at their beck and call. And I agree, you know, that there are problems. But I don't think having another state board or another state commission is the answer to your problems. First of all, I think if you want to promote your cause, you're doing so. You say that you have 24 women's groups around the state. You should be able to take those 24 women's groups and advance your cause much better than having another state organization. If you have a state organization, there are going to be certain restrictions on what you can and can't do. You don't want that. You want to be free to lobby. You want to be free to come here today as you are. And that's why I would be absolutely opposed to bringing the commission back. Another thing that concerns me is if there has been no activity since 1981, 27 years, why weren't you here before in 1982 or 1990 or any time prior to this and said, hey, we've got a commission that is on the books, but it's not doing anything. Let's get this thing going. Let's revive it. Let's see if we can't make this thing work. So I guess I'm of the opinion, if you haven't needed it before, I don't think you need it now. I believe it was either last night or yesterday, as I was watching the news, President Obama signed legislation. I believe one of the first bills that he signed had to do with women's pay. And I agree with you. I think that your 24 organizations can take this matter and increase the women's pay. You can advocate whatever you want. The same way with the fact that there needs to be more women in the legislature. We have women in the legislature that are in leadership positions, and I point out one of the best in the business today. But we have always, and this is where you really need to get out there and work harder to take your 24 organizations and become more politically active, because I have always advocated, as I have had women challenge me and have had them work for me, we always vote for, I hope, the individual that is most qualified to represent their district. And if that individual is a woman, then she should be elected and brought to peer. So I hope you understand, and I wish you good luck, and please continue the work that you've done in the past, and I would ask that the board join me in voting for this bill, and let's look back in a couple of years and hope there's been some great progress. Thank you.
Further discussion on the Turboville motion due pass on House Bill 1138. Representative Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll make this quick, but I just want that all the women in this room have to know that the men on this board especially voting against this is absolutely not a vote against you. And if I might add that I need to be careful because my wife is in the presence today. And I really do truly believe that the greatest educational tool that any family, society, or women's group can have are men and husbands and fathers who correctly respect their daughters, their mothers, their mother-in-laws, and the mothers of those children in the family setting throughout their whole lives, teaching women there is the correct way and the right way to always treat your fellow citizen, whether it's your wife or the opposite sex. And I, too, want to reiterate my friend, Representative Mr. Turboville's, the one thing in this room that does go against keeping this bill alive and this group together is the wonderful cerebral leader, our chairman, Representative Cutler. And I thank you, and I will vote for this.
Thank you. Further discussion on the Turboville motion due pass. Representative Mosher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, knowing what little bit I know of Representative Ingalls, I know I have no doubt that he did not bring this bill as an indictment against women by any stretch of the imagination. I think there's a lot of concern with the fact that we've been shut down now for 27 years and no action has been taken. That's a concern for me. But at the same time, I think looking over history, I also have a little bit of an issue with saying, well, you know, go do it on your own when it comes to rights. And even if it is sort of an empty gesture, I think that it's still important for the state government to take a position that says, you know, we support this. And I'm kind of interested to see if the women in this room and those who have spoken in opposition to the bill will now step up if this were to continue and be a commission. I'm interested to see if further action would be taken to make it a fruitful commission. So maybe out of curiosity or maybe for other reasons, I am going to oppose this.
Any other comment by the committee? Representative Killer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. Thinking back to the testimony, and they brought up the point that Native women are, 46% of the of disparity. You know, they're in despair, and much like Representative Mosher, I'm really want to see where this is going to go. But I know Representative Ingalls had no ill intention behind this, and you know, he is trying to make a point of having commissions that are outdated and all that. But I also think back to our state and tribal relations committee, and you know, we have special issues that we meet on, and you know, and I'm sure this, you know, we have some similar issues and all that. So I'm going to post this as well. But no, you know, I mean, but I understand where everybody's coming from and all this, and I appreciate this. So thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion, Representative Feinstein.
Madam Chair, a motion to amend. Amend the motion.
Do you have a substitute motion?
Substitute motion. Thank you for the terminology.
State your motion.
Madam Chair, I'd like to amend the bill in the title. We'd have to strike the word defeasance, and everywhere the word women is, change it to people, and everywhere the word chairman is, change it to chairperson. On page 2, line 3, that word his, change it to the chairpersons. And wherever it says repealed, say be amended to read.
Is there a second?
Second.
Moved by Feinstein, seconded by Gibson. Remarks on that motion, Representative Feinstein.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I believe it's in order to do that. I guess I expressed, you know, expressing the comments from one of my constituents, as I said earlier in my questioning, and I believe it has been expanded beyond. And I think if we do close this commission down, it's going to be harder to resurrect it. And if we can keep it going, at least to the status of people, I think we have something going. I think that the directive they're given in lines 5 through 8 suggests ways, it would read, which people may reach their potential and make their full contribution as wage earners and citizens to society. The state goes for all people, race, sexual orientation, sex, everything like that would fit in and be worthy of the amendment. And then I just have another question. Does this mean that our governors have been guilty of class 2 misdemeanors since this has been going on, because there's no penalty but they're not following the law?
Well, we'll let you get that question answered later, Representative Feinstein. Other committee discussion on the Feinstein substitute motion. Representative Hunt.
I would just like to point out that in response to Representative Feinstein's motion, as testified to by Secretary of Social Services, we already have a human rights council that is under the auspices of the Department of Social Services. And there isn't the word women, men, children, etc. in that title. I believe that I certainly appreciate what Representative Feinstein is doing, but I think that that's certainly going to be duplication of what already exists. And if we continue with this commission, we have to continue to fund it. And in this day and age, funding is very, very restrictive. So while I appreciate the sentiment of the substitute motion, I would encourage you to defeat it on those arguments. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Further discussion on the Feinstein substitute motion? If not, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
No. That motion fails, and we are back to the do pass motion on House Bill 1138. Representative Lust.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, interesting debate. On the one hand, you've got the issue of essentially streamlining our code, taking out what is in effect dead statute. It hasn't been in effect since 1981. On the other hand, I think the only compelling argument I've heard today is the idea of the symbolism of cutting this commission. And I'm almost swayed by that. But I'm not in the end for this reason. I'm not sure it really is a symbol or is symbolic in getting rid of this in the sense that it hasn't been effective since 1981. I think the symbolism arose in 1981 and 1982 when it was decided not to fund this. I signed on to this bill, and there certainly was no misogynistic intent on my part, nor probably the 6 women who signed on to this bill as well. I think it represents an effort by Representative Ingalls to streamline our code, get rid of things that are not relevant anymore. It in no way implies any ill will or negative wishes or impact on women. It is simply, strictly and coldly getting rid of statutes that do not apply and that have and get rid of a commission that has not been funded. In the event that funds do arise in the future, it will be very simple to create a commission much as this. We could use the exact same language as we often do when we write bills and inject this back into statute. I just simply think it serves no purpose to have a commission and language on a commission in our code that is not likely to serve in the future. And for that reason, I will be voting to do pass. Thank you.
Representative Ingalls.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want everybody in the audience to know that if this chapter of the code is repealed, there still remains another venue to do almost the same thing, and that's the Commission on Human Rights and the Division on Human Rights. One of their charges is to investigate and to study and to enforce discrimination based upon sex in the state. And I would encourage you, if this passes, and you're interested in pursuing the duties that are under the Commission of on the Status of Women, that you contact the Division of Human Rights and the Commission on Human Rights and ask them to initiate a study, which I think would be appropriate. And as far as I know, there's not a study going on right now, but it sounds to me like there's great interest in having another study. So that would be my suggestion if this passes.
Anything further of the committee? Well, I think normally I reserve remarks as often as I can in my role as chair, but I think this is one I should give a little comment on. And I, too, have been struggling with what position I should take on this. And I couldn't quite put my name on the bill, even though I understand Representative Ingalls, just his very clear desire to just simply clean up the code. And I have to say, as a woman, it pangs me a little bit to see this commission go with this bill. But on the other hand, I think that commission served its purpose during its time. And I think at this point, we might do ourselves one better by getting rid of this commission and in place perhaps putting together a different structure for a commission if we are to go back and take a more updated look at some of the issues that women face in South Dakota by putting together a commission that for its day and time will serve its clear and concrete purpose. So I'm going to support the bill, even though it's difficult for me to do that. I do think that this commission, as even opponents of the bill testified and Representative Ingalls testified in his research, that it served a great purpose and it did a lot of work. And it brought information to the state of South Dakota that was needed then and information that we still need to keep up with. So I think the need to address women's issues and to have actually some government reporting of the status of women in South Dakota is very relevant. I don't think the structure of this committee or of this commission from the way it was established necessarily serves us our best purposes in light of the things that we want to talk about and the things we need to accomplish for women in South Dakota today. So by the fact that we remove this commission doesn't mean, and I think I've heard many of you struggle to make this point, that we aren't concerned about the status of women in South Dakota. And I think many people on this panel and in the audience also have known the work of many members of this committee on the status of women in South Dakota. So having said that, I also will support the due pass motion. I want to take this just as an historical moment to thank that commission that served so well, that organized well enough to bring us a commission on the status of women. And I think in the future we will be well served by perhaps restructuring the way this is supposed to work. Certainly, as far as I know, and I asked our historian about this, I think I am the first woman to ever chair this committee. And I think that says something about we have some progress on one hand, but not enough on the other. And I want to thank my committee members for their kind remarks to me personally today. I am just in many ways symbolic of I too was mentored by women who came before me. As an intern even here, I was mentored by strong women who served in the legislature and women in this audience who have served as mentors to me. So the work regarding the status of women and equal pay for women and all of those things, those points that still need to be made, need to have a place in government. But I am not convinced that this particular commission any longer will serve that purpose. And so with that, I will support that motion. With that, I will ask our secretary to call the roll. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no.
Representative Ingalls?
Aye.
Feinstein?
No.
Gibson?
No.
Gosch?
Aye.
Hamel?
Aye.
Hoffman?
Aye.
Killer?
No.
Lust?
Aye.
Mosier?
No.
Schleckaway?
Aye.
Turbeville?
Aye.
Hunt?
Aye.
Cutler?
Aye.
Madam Chair, 9 ayes, 4 noes.
And House Bill 1138 will go to the floor. Do pass. Thank you, committee. With that, we are closing in on our final bill of the day, and that is House Bill 1144. House Bill 1144 is an act to revise certain provisions relating to the joint and several liability of a husband and wife for necessities. With that, we are open to proponent testimony on House Bill 1144. Good morning, Representative Boomgarten.
Good morning, Madam Chairwoman and distinguished committee. I would have added very distinguished committee. However, one of your members tarnished the group this morning by wearing a selective tie that I won't point out that Representative Lust is wearing this morning. Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to bring before you House Bill 1144, which comes before your committee this morning to just clarify the language that is currently in statute under 25-2-11. This is basically regarding the joint and several liability regarding a husband and wife for necessities. And I will now stand out of the way so that the other proponent may speak to the merit of the bill.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Further proponent testimony on House Bill 1144.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman, members of the committee. Dean Krogman. I represent South Dakota Collectors Association. House Bill 1144 references 25-2-11. And as many of you know, collections have occurred within the medical care area. And what's happened in the last couple of years, which happens inevitably with any laundry list eventually, is that somebody said, if it's not on the list, we're not going to allow it. So what this does in the area of civil, in the civil code, adds medical attendance to the laundry list of what can be collected for services that they already have gotten. You'll see the laundry list consists of today. This is in reference to joint and several liability for necessities. They list necessities as food, clothing, and fuel. That means joint several liability means that both the husband and wife are liable for bills incurred in that area. By adding medical attendance, it's saying that they also, in addition to those three, would be liable for medical care. Now, why medical attendance rather than medical care? In the section of the, and this is just to emphasize the term necessities, in the criminal code, which is 25-7-1, it states that it's a felony for a spouse to withhold medical attendance. That's just, I'm just emphasizing that it is a necessity and that up to this point, we have not had a problem collecting medical care. Okay, the consistency of using the term medical attendance is because of what's in the code. And so, you know, we figured rather than change the term, that's why we're using medical attendance. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Other proponent testimony for House Bill 1144? We'll hold questions until we're done with proponents and opponent testimony. Seeing no other proponents, are there any opponents to House Bill 1144? Seeing none, we will close to proponent and opponent testimony and open to questions of the committee. Are there any questions of the committee? Representative Lust.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have several questions. I won't ask my colleague who criticized my tie, but I will ask Mr. Krogman.
Yes.
Mr. Krogman, under this revised statute, would the nature of the medical treatment have any play into whether or not it's joint and several liability for payment?
I have no way of answering that.
Okay, let me give you an example. Say my spouse has an elective surgery. Okay, clearly, would you say that is a necessity?
Mr. Krogman?
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. I would say it's elective.
Okay.
But I would also say it's medical care, and I'm assuming it was approved by both, or it wouldn't happen.
I'm not going to go there.
Well, no, wait.
Further questions
now,
of
now
the
wait,
committee.
Now wait, now let me change that. Apparently it's approved by both. I would be surprised if they didn't know about it.
That happens a lot around here, Mr. Krogman.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Have to clarify. Other questions of the committee?
Well, wait, is that it?
Yeah.
Do you have a follow-up, Representative Lust?
I do.
Follow-up, yes. Representative Lust.
Sorry to hear that.
I could call Representative Boomgarten back. You're pulling in the concept into medical expenses of reasonable value in line 7. How would you define reasonable value when it comes to insurance expenses? Would you define it as what the insurance carrier may pay? Would you define it as the charge by the facility? How would you define reasonable value?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Krogman.
I would define reasonable value whatever might be in the existing contracts that exist with insurance, which is usually discounted, and because that is what is paid by the insurance company. And other than that, and I, you know, you cannot, I don't think anybody can find a term or a definition that would be reasonable for all the different procedures that can occur. I don't know how you would determine that.
Very good, thank you.
Other questions of the committee?
Madam Chair.
Representative Hunt.
Mr. Krogman, if you could just remain for a question or two.
Can you tell I'm anxious to get out of here?
I think we can tell.
Yeah.
let me clarify. Is there or is there not a specific definition of medical attendance in our code today?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Krogman.
I have been told there is not, that it is not defined.
Follow-up, Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, you've moved from using the term medical attendance to medical care. And I think I can think of some differences between those, but I am a little troubled if we don't have a particular definition of medical attendance, and I'll give you an example. For example, would this include medical insurance policy premiums?
Mr. Krogman?
Chair. I would say that it would not, that it is the service of medical care.
And I believe you said that medical attendance would not include elective surgery, such as plastic surgery?
No, I did not.
Okay.
It would include any medical service.
Madam Chair, just another question, if I might.
Representative Hunt.
In your question or answers to questions, you also said something about if the other party approved it. Now, there's no requirement for approval. One party can go out and, without informing the other party, the other spouse, go out and incur a medical bill. And that would still be included under this revision to House Bill 1144 then.
Madam Chair, I would really like to strike the word approved from my previous testimony. Now, approved is not proper, and certainly, people could get medical service, and this would hold both liable in the collection of that medical service.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Further questions of the committee. Representative Feinstein.
Madam Chair, for Mr. Krogman, in reading other laws around, and reading Medicaid laws and all that, they constantly refer to things as food and clothing and fuel. I haven't ever found where medical attendance or medical care is included in there when there's issues of spousal support. Where else in the law, federal, state, or whatever, is it included? I guess I'm going to guess that there is no other place. Why do we want to put it in here, just this limited spot? It seems like can you explain why we're trying to just put it in here and there are other areas where it's not included?
Mr. Krugman.
Yes, Madam Chair. The reason we're putting it here is because it has occurred as a problem of collection because it's not part of a list of necessities. And I tried to compare the felony code by saying that it is even a felony to withhold. So obviously it must be a necessity. I'm just trying to make the connection. Now, anywhere in the code, there's six or seven places that medical attendance appears and without definition. And that's why we tried just to connect the two. Now, it has occurred where a small claims collection and the judge looks at the list and says, well, medical care is not on there, so I'm not going to allow it. We haven't had it happen before. Many, many collections have been made for medical care, medical attendance in this case. So that's how we identified the problem. It wasn't a problem in the past, but it could be in the future. We just want to add it so that we can continue to do what we've been doing.
Follow-up, Representative Feinstein.
I guess since I haven't seen it anywhere in the code where food, clothing, and fuel are lumped in with medical care, how about other states? Is anybody else including the medical care as a necessity in there, or would we be the pioneer?
Mr. Krogman.
Yeah, I have no idea if there's other states, and whether or not we're the pioneer is just our recognition that medical care is a necessity.
Other questions of the committee? Representative Gosch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for Mr. Krogman. Right now, if one spouse goes to the hospital or to a doctor, the options of collecting would be through private insurance, Medicaid, Medicare, that spouse's personal assets, and any assets that spouse holds jointly with somebody else, including the other spouse. Wouldn't that be correct?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Krogman.
That's my understanding, yes.
Can I, one more, please?
Follow-up?
Yes, please.
Representative Gosch.
So, in essence, then, if this bill passed, this would allow a collector to go after the spouse who didn't get the treatment insofar as the other spouse's assets are concerned, wouldn't it?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Mr. Krogman.
Yes.
Okay.
Other questions of the committee? Representative Ingalls.
Thank you, Madam Chair. SDCL 25-7-4 makes it a felony for one spouse to not provide food, clothing, shelter, or medical attendance. And you're just trying to make this consistent
and provide a civil enforcement mechanism rather than charging everybody with a felony. Is that right?
That is correct, other than the statement of rather than charge everybody with a felony. I'm not sure that that would, but yes, to be consistent.
Follow-up, Representative Ingalls.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this statute is not just enforceable by collectors, it's also enforceable by a spouse who's been deprived by another spouse of medical attendance. Isn't that correct?
If that occurred within the filing of a judgment, that would be correct.
Other questions of the committee? Representative Gosch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That led me to think of another question, that last line of questions. Although there might be a statute making it a crime not to provide medical attendance, that isn't that clearly different than collecting? Because from the spouse who's not receiving the treatment, meaning I think the criminal law is directed at both spouses making sure the other gets to the hospital if they need to, whereas this would go beyond that. I don't see that as being part and parcel with the criminal law. This would say, even though you're complying with, even though you're getting your spouse to the hospital, now you're going to be responsible for that spouse's debts.
Mr. Krugman.
Madam Chair, the question is whether or not they're comparable, and I agree they are not comparable. I had stated that the only reason I brought that up is that to show that medical care can be a necessity. Understandably, the felony code, the criminal code, is different than the civil code.
Other questions of the committee? If not, Representative Hamill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is it a long list in civil code where the spouse would not be responsible for the debts of the other spouse, for we non-lawyers in the group? I mean, what is the general guideline in statute as far as the responsibility for debts?
Mr. Krugman, do you care to answer that question?
I would say the differentiation is why we're here today, and that is defined as necessities as opposed to those that are not necessity, for example, a car, TV, couch, or whatever.
Follow-up, Representative Hamill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So for the essentials in life, the spouse in general would share that responsibility, but if a spouse goes out and spends money on something defined as non-essential, then the other partner is not responsible. Is that correct?
Mr. Krugman.
Madam Chair, I would say that you cannot say that depending on the type of contract that exists. If you sign a contract and you put something on payment and they require both, so just to say a blanket statement that they're not liable, I think there's many times in what you might determine as not a necessity that both would be liable, either by contract or whatever. It might be because of a loan in purchasing that they both would be. So we're trying to cover what we define as necessities.
Other questions of the committee? Seeing none, we'll close to committee questions and open to committee discussion or action on House Bill 1144. Representative Lust.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move to defer this bill to the 41st day.
Second.
Moved by Lust, seconded by Hoffman. Remarks on that motion, Representative Lust.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this effort is misplaced, certainly in this statute. If you look at 252-11, which is sought to be amended here, it talks about the necessities, food, clothing, fuel, and it's supplemented by for the family. Okay, so to inject medical attendance, and I won't even go into the discussion on the vagaries of medical attendance, but to inject that into this statute and what this statute purports to address doesn't fit. The medical treatment some individual may have, elective or not, would be difficult to classify with any definition what is for the family and what is not for the family. as understand the objective. I think it doesn't belong here. I'm not sure if I agree with the underlying principle anyway. And for that, I would ask, with that, I would ask that you support the motion to defer to 41st day. Thank you.
Other comments on the Lust motion to the 41st day? Representative Gibson.
Madam Chair, I initially had problems with medical attendance because I have no idea what it means. I think it should be defined if we're going to deal with it. Thank you.
Is there anything else of the committee? Representative Hunt.
Madam Chair, I would encourage support of the motion to defer. You know, as I look at this thing, medical attendance, we're talking about huge amounts of money. Food, clothing, and fuel, obviously not such high dollar items. And I'm thinking of the situation of where a husband is involved in an automobile accident, is taken to the hospital. They do everything possible to keep him alive for the benefit of the family, but he dies. And now the wife is faced with tens of thousands of dollars worth of medical bills. I think there's a lack of some fairness in this. And I think that the original intent dealing with food, clothing, and fuel makes a lot of sense. But now when we're starting to add unknown factors such as medical attendance and all the dollars that could involve, I think we're going beyond what perhaps the legislature should do. Encourage your support of the motion. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Other comments on the Lust motion to defer House Bill 1144 to the 41st day? Representative Hoffman.
Madam Chair, just to reiterate what Representative Hunt said, I think it might be much more economically hard to the family should the person in the hospital live and they keep them alive on life support for years. Where will that end? That's where this falls into a problem for me. And I can also see, to just go further, just before a woman, let's just say, or a man gets a divorce, they decide to do some elective surgery, and that passes on to the spouse too. The medical side of it is, I'll vote for this. Thank you.
Representative Ingalls.
I'm going to oppose this motion, and Representative Hunt gave one example, one extreme example, but I'm thinking of the person who is in need of medical care and their spouse is not providing that, and perhaps an impoverished person with a spouse having a good income will not be able to get the care they need, and even though their spouse is capable of providing that. This bill would not be unlike our other civil laws on the books. STCL 25-7-28 requires adult children to provide necessary food, clothing, shelter, and medical attendance to their parents if the parents can't provide it for themselves. We also have a statute requiring that parents provide necessary food, clothing, medical attendance to their minor children. So this change would be consistent with similar laws we have on the books in the civil realm, and I would support it because just as Representative Hunt said, there could be one extreme example. I think there could also be a number of examples where spouses have the ability to provide medical care for their spouse and don't do so, and that's what concerns me.
Other discussion? Representative Lust.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to rebut Representative Ingalls' comments. This bill, 25-2-11, this statute deals with joint and several liabilities to third parties, not to each other. Those issues, the liability for each other, to each other, are addressed elsewhere in Chapter 25-2. And that indicates that if I have private property or private assets that are mine, I can't be compelled to spend those on behalf of my spouse's debt. To inject this idea of the joint and several liability now to include liability between each other, I think would render the other statutes moot, and I think it would be misplaced. So I understand what you're saying, Representative Ingalls. I don't think this statute addresses the issue you are talking about, however. Thank you.
Further discussion of the committee? If not, we'll close to committee discussion, and the secretary will please call the roll. Those in favor of the Lust motion to the 41st day will say aye. Those opposed, no.
Representative Ingalls?
No.
Feinstein?
Aye.
Gibson?
Aye.
Gosch?
Aye.
Hamill? Hoffman?
Aye.
Killer?
Aye.
Lust?
Aye.
Mosher?
Aye.
Shuckaway?
Aye.
Turbeville?
Aye.
Hunt?
Aye.
Cutler?
Aye.
Madam Chair, 12 ayes, 1 no.
And House Bill 1144 is deferred to the 41st day. Thank you. With that, committee members, we have moved through our calendar. We're going to enter a time very shortly that our list of bills is going to double and may even triple as we approach crossover day. And while we've enjoyed the opportunity for a lot of latitude in discussion and opportunities to open the committee hearing back up to proponent and opponent testimony, we may not be able to enjoy quite as much latitude as our calendar fills and we get closer to crossover day coming up. So I thank you for keeping your questions on point, and I appreciate the work of the committee this morning. With that, the chair would entertain a motion to adjourn. Moved by Turbeville, seconded by Gibson. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? We are adjourned.